Bottomley, reel 8.
We're on the camp. We used to have to pinch coal to for our little iron stoves, or else go out in the woods and find twigs and things. We weren't allowed a coal ration or anything like that, but the cooks had to cook on a coal stove, so the cooks were allowed coal in the cookhouse. So early hours of the morning, we used to go round to the back of the cookhouse and pinch. It's the only way we could get it. By rights, I ought to be in jail, didn't I? Oh, once we were nearly caught and all. But we had to wait till about 3 a.m. when all was quiet, and we hoped the officers were all asleep before we crept out. And we had to go with gloves on and pick coal up a piece at a time into the bucket. We put a piece of cloth in the bucket so that it didn't rattle. We were expert thieves. That's when we pinched coal, and Bunny must have done it as well, although she wasn't in my hut. That time when we were on alert all the time, and we were told to have we couldn't take, if we had to go at a moment's notice and flee, we couldn't take more than a kit bag with absolute necessities in, that we could hang over our shoulders. We couldn't take suitcases or anything like that. Anything like that we'd have to leave behind. And we'd to burn all letters. We hadn't to leave any letters from folk in England and all that sort of thing. That's the only time that we really thought we were beat. And all those people coming down from the casualty clearing stations. And it really looked bad in March. March 1918, it really looked bad. But we heard afterwards, on reading accounts of the war, it was the Canadians that turned the point, what did they call it? I mentioned it before and I've forgotten it. Somewhere up there, they repulsed the Germans. If the Germans had only known how beaten we were, they could have pressed on, but they just stopped when they should have gone on. It was really a mistake on their part. A funny thing happened. I went up to, after the war, went on a coach tour. We had little coach trips to see the battlefield. Went up to see Elbert. At Elbert, there was a statue of a Madonna on a church steeple that was hanging like that, and all the people round about in the village said, if that fell, we'd lose the war. And it hung on at an angle till the end of the war. It's most peculiar. Well, when we were going there, we passed through a place called Villers-Bretonneux, and there were hundreds of Australians buried in that place. It's on the Somme. And we went in a mill that was bombed, and we could wander about, and I opened a desk in the office. It was full of hand grenades. And on the windowsill was a little bantam cockerel, stiff. It was dead, but it was stiff with its tail stuck out like that, just as it had been struck with a piece of shrapnel. And I couldn't take my eyes off it. It was so pretty. It was all colours, you know, the little bantam. And I think then the war, unconsciously the war must have come home to me. What a rotten thing it is, really. But in that office, I was looking in the desk to see what sort of a place it was. It was a woolen mill, and I didn't know Bradford then, and they did business with a firm in Bradford. And I took this card out, and when I got back to the camp, a Bradford girl that I know, she said, oh, I know that place. She said, oh, let me have it. And so I gave it to her. I wasn't thinking, I hadn't been to Bradford then. When I did come to Bradford, I came by myself when I came on leave. I came on in the October of 1918. I'd never been any further north than where? Or St Albans or somewhere like that, very near London. And my mother was horrified when I said I was coming to live in Yorkshire. She said it's next to the North Pole. She thought she never came up to see me. She really thought it was somewhere near the North Pole. And when I did come up, I met my in-laws. I didn't come with my boyfriend at Bradford Station, and they took me home. I had an awful difficult job learning the language. They had hours of fun out of me. I went to see a friend I think she was a relation, really, of my husband's father. And that day, it was the 5th of October, and it's what they call Whipsy Fair. Do you know Whipsy? Is it south or north of Bradford? Anyway, it's a suburb of Bradford. And they used to have a famous horse fair. It's dying out now. And my father-in-law took me to see this fair. They were running horses up and down the street to sell and that sort of thing. And there were little sideshows. There were a fairground and people selling stuff by auction. Man standing up on a cart holding grapes up and selling grapes. And then we went on from the... Oh, it was cold. I thought, oh, I should never... It's as cold as it is.
While you were visiting his family in Bradford on that holiday, on leave, what did they know about what was going on in the war?
Nothing, very little. All they could talk about was the Lowmore explosion. Apparently there was a chemical works at Lowmore, which is a bit further on than Whipsy, and it had caught fire. And fire brigades, this is just before I joined up, but it was still, although it had happened a year or two before, it was still fresh in their memories, and to them it was the most awful thing that could ever have happened. And the fire engine, one of the Bradford fire engines, as it went into this place, it blew up. There was an explosion, and all the firemen were killed, and the engine was blown to bits. It was rather funny because one of those firemen, we met him when we were on our... No, we didn't meet him, he was dead. We met his wife on our honeymoon, and we didn't know her, but she had a little tiny boy who was born after her husband died. Somehow I couldn't see... At the beginning, I couldn't get away from the Lowmore explosion. Everybody, wherever I went or whoever I met, seemed to talk about it. It was the thing that was uppermost in people's minds. But when I went to this Whipsy Fair, and from there, my father-in-law took me on to a place called Wyke to meet a relation of theirs. She was a real Yorkshire woman. I could hardly understand a word she said. I could understand French people better than her. And she proved to be a very great friend at the finish. She thought I was very comical with being a southerner.
Did you tell them what the war was like?
I didn't talk. We were asked not to talk about it. We were asked... careless talk costs lives. That's the main thing we worked on, you know. And to keep your mouth shut and don't talk about it, because you don't know who's listening. But that day, while I was at that house at Wyke, it rained, hailed, snowed, thundered and lightened, all in one afternoon. And I thought, I'd wonder what sort of a place I'd come to. I just thought it's true what my mother says, it's next door to the North Pole. Well, it was happy in spasms. I was happy with my boyfriend because we were in love and that sort of thing. That was a happy part. But even that brings anxiety and heartache, doesn't it? When you're parted and you're wondering if he's going to be killed, wherever he's been sent. He was sent to Amiens in the thick of the shelling, and he didn't tell me until he came back where he'd been. Because we, even from each other, we had to be quiet about talking about things. We hadn't to talk to each other about things because you didn't know how who was listening or how far it would go. So when he was sent to Amiens, he didn't tell me. He said he'd be away for a day or two and that was that. I didn't ask him where he was going. He hadn't to do. Well, these are 1931, Old Comrades Association, Georgian Restaurant, Brompton Road. These are all the old comrades that we met. I didn't know any of those. But you sign one another's menus. There's Pip Hall, that's the one that was my bridesmaid, she's dead now. Bubbles, and she put in brackets, Better Old. We christened our huts different names. Ours was the Bing Girls. You won't know about the Bing Boys, will you? During the war, while we were out there, there was a play on at, or a review at the Hippodrome called the Bing Boys. George Robey, Violet Lorraine were the stars, and it was very, very popular, especially among the military. And everybody went to see the Bing Boys when they were on leave. And we called our hut the Bing Girls. And in French, Bing means a biff. If you hit somebody, it's a Bing, you know, not a... you'd say, oh, he's Bing, it's hit me. But they thought that we were funny because we called our hut the Bing Girls. And Bubbles was Better Old. That's from Bruce Bairnsfather's pictures. Do you know Bruce Bairnsfather was an officer in the First World War, very good cartoonist, and he drew wonderful pictures of the common or garden soldier with a droopy moustache in all sorts of awkward positions and a brilliant moon shining down on him when he's in a dugout, and the other half, this brilliant moon and his sweetheart look at his or his wife looking up at it and gazing at it and saying, I wonder if the same moon is shining on Bert, and this old Bert saying, this blinking moon would be the death of me. And things like that, you know. And it was always called, wherever he was, it was the Better Ole. And so they called their hut the Bigger Ole. Ruby Russell, that's what she mentioned in that other letter, she was at that reunion. Bolshin, she was of the Better Ole. Robinson is the girl that deloused with me. This is in 1931. I've met her since, you see, and Ruby Russell. Glowworms and... Maxton, she was a Scottish girl. I don't know who Taylor was or Haywood. Betty Malcolm, I still write to her. She's 80. She lives in Shakespeare's country, Stratford-on-Avon. And she used to wear, she had some wonderful slippers with all feathers round, frill of feathers round. And I used to call, I said she was like a shire horse and had feathery feet. And she signs herself Feathery to me now. I still call her Feathery. And Miss Welsford, I think Miss Welsford, the officer, is dead now. Oh, here we are. Look. Oh, this is our camp, look. Would you like that for the... For the record, that's Camp 3, Abbeville. Is it on the back?
Yes.
What does it say on the back? Camp 3, Abbeville, 1917. You see the Nissen hut there, with the linen, oiled linen windows. And those were two very noble ladies that looked after our YWCA. They're very, very kind. You know, they were. When I think back, they were marvellous, really. They got us all sorts of things from home that were difficult to come by, such as sanitary pads and things like that, and to sell in the YWCA. They sold us all sorts of things, And I went to great trouble to get things for us. Birthday cards and stuff like that to send to people that we couldn't get locally.